Thank you, Jay.
Thank you,
Thank
Jay.
you, Jay. And guys, bear with me just a second here, but we've had a special request from our speaker tonight, and I'm going to be sharing something with you guys. So I'll just here we oh, wait a minute, stop that. I need to make sure I press the right buttons. Here we go. Press that one, press that one, press that one. And this is an old friend of our meeting reading how it works.
Yeah, I'm Jim. I'm an addict. How it works, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. We continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order. We can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There's one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, and the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, and one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society, in everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you're like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand never enough. We put great emphasis on this, but we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately. But we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug, full stop. We are people with a disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. And for those that might not know, it's the anniversary of our friend Jim leaving us off as the next part of his journey at 27 years clean. He's missed by everyone here, so it's nice to hear his voice. Okay, guys, thank you everyone who shared, helped us open the meeting, and welcome those that are joining us since we first started. Warm welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a massive welcome to anyone that might be new to Narcotics Anonymous this evening with us. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we do have a speaker tonight. I'm delighted to say he's going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us for the next 40, 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with, their journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to hand you over to Tammy, who's going to introduce them. So, Tammy, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. My name's Tammy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Tammy.
Tammy. Tammy.
Hey, I've been given the great pleasure of introducing our speaker this evening. This young woman came into my life just over 5 years ago here on Hickner and burst into my life like an absolute light, pure light. She has such a pure heart. She's so loving, kind, giving, understanding. To see her take this, run with it, grow and change so much. It's just been phenomenal. She's had such an understanding and a knowing that, she's had this since she came into the rooms, and she's just got the most, so much awareness and such an understanding about herself that it's phenomenal. And she's a constant source of inspiration to me. She also got clean on the screen and has stayed clean on the screen. We'll leave that up to her to tell you the rest of that. So yeah, I'll introduce you to our speaker this evening. Lisa, over to you.
Welcome,
Thanks,
Lisa.
Tammy. Thank you. Thank you,
thank
Tammy.
you,
Hi.
Tommy.
Thanks, Tammy.
I'm an addict. My name is Lisa.
Hi,
Hello,
Lisa.
sir. Tommy. Hi,
Oh,
Lisa.
Lisa,
Hi, Lisa.
Lisa.
Hi, everyone. As you can imagine, I'm very emotional. Thank you, Tammy, for that beautiful introduction. And thank you to Steve and Jay for setting it up so that we could have the recording of Jim reading how it works at the beginning of the meeting. That made me emotional. Then Tammy made me emotional. yeah, it's as Steve mentioned, it's a year today since since our dear home group member Jim died, and I just think it's so I can't think of the word. It just seems so strange that my share landed on this day, because every year that I've done a main share on my birthday, it's always been like the closest day, the closest Saturday to the day of my clean date. And this year it was like the week after, and that meant it landed on the year anniversary of Jim's death. And I don't know, it's strange, but it feels really special as well. And as a very wise man said to me very early in my recovery, there are no coincidences in NA. And I believe that to be true based on my experience of being in NA and my experience of, you know, developing a higher power and of my own understanding. I like to see things as signs in life, you know, not like completely over the top. Well, maybe I am over the top with it. I don't know. Who cares? It's like there's this famous quote that's like, you can either see like nothing, like life is like nothing is a miracle, or you can see life is like everything being a miracle. And I kind of tried to look at it on the side of everything. yeah, so yes, yeah, it's I was, I mean, I was very close to Jim. He was one of my closest friends. A lot of people would ask me like, if it, like, isn't that strange? Because he was a lot older than me. But I honestly have never, I just never saw age. I never really do. Like, I just am open to people that I, you know, that I get on with. And me and Jim had a real like soul connection. And I really believe in things like that. We really were like very similar people, despite the fact that, you know, we're big, that he was a lot older, and all those things. We really had a very deep connection. We were very alike, and he was a great friend to me, for the first 4 years of my recovery. And this year, I've had to do it without him. But not alone. I've had, you know, I've got loads of amazing people in my life, in NA that I, you know, that I've met through these meetings, and I'm so grateful for that. And I'm really, you know, I'm really grateful I met Jim, and it wasn't like a big shock when he died because he had a lot of health problems, and that's why me and him got on so well. Well, it's not the only reason, but that's one of the reasons we got so close, was because we both have, or he had, I have, you know, quite severe health problems. Physically, I'm, you know, I'm quite limited, and I've been housebound for many years and bedbound as well for a lot of that time. It's thankfully I'm not bedbound all the time, but majority of the time I am in my bed, and I have an illness that really limits my energy and ability to do many things, which can be difficult. And so meeting Jim was really amazing because he was in that same position and he understood. And it's, I think it's a sort of thing that's difficult to understand unless you've been in that situation. It's like I remember when lockdown happened and people were like freaking out about staying in their houses and stuff. And I was like, I've been doing this for years. Like I've trained for this moment. Actually, I'm not to put too much light on COVID because I know it was a very serious thing that happened, and it's not it wasn't a good thing. But my social life got so much better when that happened because people were indoors and they couldn't do things, and so I'd have all these kind of like Zoom gatherings, which was pretty cool. And yeah, so yeah, me and Jim developed this very close relationship with each other. I think we bonded over just, like the kind of, well, we bonded over a lot of stuff, but we bonded over this kind of shared thing of both having really severe physical health conditions, which was really lovely. And we spoke every Wednesday morning, 10 a.m., and every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Yeah, and I really miss him. I really miss having that relationship, in the physical realm. But I still feel like I have a relationship with him, even though he's no longer here. I still feel very close to him, and I don't know. It's a strange experience, but I kind of view death in a more, I don't know if it's a more healthy way, but it feels to me in a much more healthy way since coming into recovery. And I put a lot of that down to the fact that I have a higher power now and I see things from a different perspective. And so death doesn't seem like the massive ending that it used to, although sometimes it can still feel like that when, when you can't speak to that person. It can be really, I mean, it doesn't make it easier, but I definitely feel like Jim is with me and like with us in these meetings. He was a big part of Higna, and I'm certainly not the only person that misses him by any stretch of the imagination. He was very much loved here in this group. And I know this is my main share, but I'm talking about him anyway. I know it's probably strange for people that don't know him, but he was just a very special guy. And just like, there's so many things he said that are just like things you'll like, just like quotes that people will never forget. Like he was just like an unforgettable person. And I just feel so grateful to have met him. Like Tammy said at the beginning, before my share, I got clean on the screen, and I've stayed clean on the screen. Technically, I was actually clean when I found NA, but I like clean on the screen. It sounds cool. Yeah, I got clean by accident. So I had no intentions of getting clean, and I certainly didn't ever think about that. That's not true. Of course, I thought about it. I thought about it, but I didn't ever take it seriously. It didn't seem like something that was feasible. I used to be, my mom used to try and say to me, maybe you could get off, because I was really addicted to the painkillers that I was on, which were opiate painkillers. And so that's what my family kind of saw as the outward problem, was that specific drug. But I took all of their drugs I could get my hands on. But that one I was physically addicted to, so it was slightly different because I would do anything to get my hands on it. But my mum would say, maybe you could get off of the painkillers and things would get better for you. And I would be so like, no, I can't do that. Like, I'm like, look at my life. I'm fucking housebound. I'm bedbound. Like, what would be the point? I'm in pain all the time. I don't want to stop taking them. I'd say to her, you can't unring a bell, Mum. I thought that was it. I knew now what it was like to not have to feel anything. I could, I wasn't taking this medication as prescribed. I was usually, on average, taking about 10 at a time, in the last few years. More if I could. Oh, it was like this nightmare existence. It was really awful. I don't know why I was so wedded to the idea of it. Like, I really was very stubborn about it. I didn't want to talk to anyone about getting clean. But it was such a miserable existence. But like I said, I had no intentions of getting clean. And then I overdosed really badly. And I ended up, one day I just like woke up and I was in hospital and I didn't have a clue what I was doing there. And yeah, it turned out I had overdosed on this medication. I shouldn't even call it medication, but like I used to order drugs online a lot. Where I live in Shetland, which for anyone who doesn't know is a very tiny island. It's the most northerly part of the UK. It's a tiny island right in the middle of the North Sea. And so like and I was housebound, right? So like I would get a lot, I'd have to get like drugs delivered to my house. But it's not an easy thing to get them online. So, I was using very dodgy places to buy them from. So I ordered all this and they didn't have the tablets that I wanted, so I just ordered something else. Something else that said it was a narcotic and that it was highly addictive. And I thought, yep, I'll take that one. Didn't even know what it was, by the way. I didn't even read up on it. I never even heard of it. And yeah, it turned out to be a really dangerous thing to take in large quantities. And I had to be induced into a coma because they're worried about my brain. And it was this was during like the beginning of COVID. This was May 2020, so it was not a good time to be going into hospital. They did allow my mum to come in and sit with me while I was in this coma. And they did tell her like you might want to say your goodbyes because they were packing me up to take me on a tiny little airplane that they to take me to the mainland, to Aberdeen, to a bigger hospital. And because they can't, like, we don't have the facilities here in Shetland for being kept in a coma. You really need to go to Aberdeen or a bigger hospital to have that, to be in that position. So and my mum wasn't able to come with me because these planes are just tiny and they couldn't fit her. And like I guess it'd be like a nurse or a paramedic or whoever in the plane and all the stuff. So they said, you're gonna have to, like, maybe you should say your goodbyes now because it's not looking great. So, I mean, I can't imagine what my poor mum went through in that moment. And so I woke up in Aberdeen Hospital completely alone. No idea why I was there. No idea what was going on. I had been in, like when they'd been taking me out of the coma, I was in full psychosis, I guess. I've never really spoken to anybody, like doctor-wise, about it because I avoid doctors. But I was hallucinating really badly. And so I was very frightened when I came to properly. It was a very frightening state of mind. So anyway, got clean by accident. I came out of a coma and I was in the hospital. They wouldn't give me anything. I didn't even ask for anything. That's how shocked I was. I didn't even ask for any drugs. I didn't speak. I didn't move. I just sat like I don't know. I must have been in complete shock. I didn't move. I was terrified. So anyway, that all happened. But also in all the terror and the trauma of that, it did also wake me up to the fact that I was destroying myself with these drugs. You know, once I realized that it was the drugs that had caused this, and it was explained to me what had happened and that, they said to me, "Oh, you know, you've been in the coma, you've detoxed." So I'm like, I remember thinking like, oh, because like that's that initial part that you never want to go through. Well, I never did. Let me speak for myself. I apologize. I never wanted to go through the detox. I never wanted to go through with the withdrawals. I would do anything not to do that. You know, I would go against every fiber of my moral code not to go through that. You know, I was gonna lie, I was gonna cheat, I was gonna steal, I was gonna do. I was going to manipulate, gaslight. I'd do whatever I could not to feel that. So yeah, it was like, I mean, I was in full withdrawal, so it wasn't like I was in a great place, like, woohoo, I've detoxed. But like, there was something in me that thought, oh, like maybe this is my chance. And it wasn't like I totally felt like that, because I remember being like, oh my God, how am I going to get drugs? I couldn't, not in the hospital, and then not for the next 2 weeks because my dad had to come and get me. And then I had to stay at my dad's because of COVID rules. I had to stay there for 2 weeks. So I wasn't allowed to leave the bedroom. So I was basically like locked in this little room for 2 weeks. Couldn't get drugs that way. And it was just like, you know, I was starting to realize that like this was my chance to see if I could get clean. Like maybe I could do that. It got that idea in my head. And honestly, like it scared me so much what had happened. Because I was really cocky. Like I really didn't think, like I thought I was above overdosing, like, and going into hospital. Like I thought I could do whatever I wanted. I thought I could take as much as I wanted. I could take different things all at once. I could do whatever and get away with it. And now I had proof I couldn't. And I'd hurt the people around me that I loved the most and that loved me the most. You know, I could see my family were distraught by this whole thing and by the years preceding that, the things that I'd put them through. My family were exhausted at this point when I think about it. Like it was really crap. Because they had, especially like for my mum and my boyfriend Danny, who I live with. I really put them through a lot. My sister too, and my dad actually, because they were, you know, taking care of me. I wasn't able to do much for myself, but I was constantly deceiving them and things to get drugs, to get things past them. I was lying all the time. I was making really bad choices, really bad choices. And, I didn't want to hurt anybody anymore, you know. Like I really didn't. I never wanted to hurt anybody. I was never like I didn't care that I hurt them. It was just if I took drugs, I didn't have to feel or think about it. But I had to really face up to the hurt that I'd caused. And like my niece and nephew were really hurt by it as well. I can't even remember what ages they were. They're now 18 and 19. And it was 5 years ago, so you guys can work that out. I can't do maths. I honestly, but you know, they were really hurt by it. I'm very close to them. I've got younger niece and nephew, but they were so little, they had no idea. It was actually my youngest nephew's first birthday when I did that, when I overdosed. So yeah, coincides my clean time coincides with around the time of his birthday every year. And it always reminds me of like what I put my sister through when she was trying to celebrate her son's first birthday. So yeah, I'm kind of getting stuck in this part of my story, but I think I've just been thinking a lot about like the hurt I put people through, recently, and it's yeah, that just seems to be where I've gone with it. So yeah, that was how I kind of found NA. I typed it into the search engine, like help for people. What was it? Help for addict. How to help for, I can't remember, but help for people with addiction in Shetland. Because I tell you, I got no help from any of the mental health places here. Not one bit of help. So I started looking online. And that's when I saw the Highlands and Islands groups of Narcotics Anonymous. And I thought, oh, and that was it. And I actually, I was gonna go to that meeting. It was actually the Saturday night I was going to go, but I chickened out. So it was actually my first meeting was on a Sunday. But yeah, I was terrified. Terrified. I had no idea what I was doing. I thought that I could only be a part of like an NA chapter that was in Shetland. I didn't realize it was fine. Like I could go anywhere in the world I want and I would be just as welcome. I thought I had to find somewhere Shetland specific. And so yeah, I went to my first meeting and God, that's the best thing I've ever done. It really is. I just was ready for this when I found it. I was really fucking tired. I was really tired of all of the using, and I truly could see that it was like a nightmare way to live, by that point. And yeah, and I also think my head was clear enough that I was, starting to be able to be led by my higher power and starting to be able to connect with that. I didn't really know that at the time. I think, that my higher power was guiding me in that direction. And because I was clean by that point, I was able to kind of follow the directions or hear it or something. And yeah, I was just blown away by NA. And I've only ever been to online meetings. So I have no idea what it's like to be in a face-to-face meeting. I've never felt like my recovery is lacking because of that. Like, I honestly love the meetings that I attend. I love the Highlands and Islands groups of NA. I've never left here. I came here and I was like, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. And everybody was really just glad to see me and wanted to talk to me, and it was really nice because my family didn't really want to talk to me. At that point, nobody really wanted to speak to me because I'd been such a frigging nightmare. I really was. I actually recently found this video, came up on my memories. It was from 5 years ago, but it was earlier in the month. And it was a video I'd taken of myself with one of my cats. I have no idea why I was taking the video because it was very disturbing. I was completely out of it. Like my face looked awful. Like, ugh. It was like, oh, that's what I looked like. Oh. And I was with my mum, sister, and niece at the time. And I was like, oh my God. And I showed it to them and they were like, yeah, that's what you look like all the time. Oh. Oh, the shame. I don't know where that came from. That's been really like, oh God, it really disturbed me seeing that. Anyway, I just gone from like this horrible life of real isolation. I mean, I live with my boyfriend and we've lived together for a long time. I started going out with him when I was like 19, LB. 18 years nearly that we've been together. So we've lived together a long time and he just stopped talking. Like he just stopped talking to me, and I don't blame any of them after I saw that video. So I wasn't, I was really living a very sad existence. I think I was like thought that my friends were like the people on the reality TV shows that I was watching. So coming to online meetings was just so magical because I had this. Like I got all these people to talk to, and like I could share, people were like, okay, now it's your turn to share, and I could share for a few minutes, whatever it was, and like people would just listen, and then afterwards they would thank me, and it was like it was really nice. It was really nice, and then I got to know people and started to speak to them on the phone, or we'd fellowship after the meetings. But I love doing that. I love hanging out after the meeting. On Monday night, this last Monday, then me and one of my friends were on the meeting until about like it was almost 11 o'clock at night, which is late for me. Probably not that late for most people, but that is late. But we were just having such a fun time, just laughing and joking, and like I love that. I didn't have that. So it was that was just one thing that was incredible when I came here. And the other thing, was the identification that I got and that I still get. I remember just hearing this honesty that was so poetic. It was like beautiful to hear people being so honest about things that I had never had the courage to ever say out loud. To be honest about how they felt about themselves, about drugs, about whatever. I felt like I could like take a deep breath for the first time in forever when I was at my first meeting. And I met my sponsor at that first meeting, and she's a very special human, and I feel really blessed to have found that, when I did. And to have been able to develop the relationship with her that I've got, to have somebody in my life that I trust so much. I'm very emotional today. Do you know, there's just so many people that I love just so much. When I come into these, these meetings, and I do go to pretty much for the most part, I go to the same meetings every day. And I like that because I don't know, it's like this, like I know, like there's kind of a core group of people in those meetings that I know. And I love it if there's new people there, different people there. I love that. But it does help you to get to know people when you're going to the, like meetings regularly. And I remember like when I came to meetings and I could hear everybody knew each other so well, and they were laughing and joking with each other and having these conversations. And I was like, oh, I want that. I want to be friends with these people. But I knew that like I had to give it time, which was a very mature thought for my head because I really wasn't that mature, but I think I was getting like lots of good higher power like nudges at this point. And so I remember being like, just keep coming to these meetings. Like these people will be my friends, and they are. There was like one point where I think I was 6 months clean, and this one lady who is one of the kind of core members of this group, she said, "You are our Lisa now," and it was like I was so happy and elated. I'll never forget that moment because I was, I don't think anybody wants me around. I'm constantly thinking, oh my God, these people must be like rolling their eyes when I'm sharing. Like, oh God, nobody ever, why would anybody want me around? I'm so annoying. So for somebody to say that to me, that I really wanted to be my friend, I knew in that moment, like, oh, these people accept me. And it meant everything. I feel very I feel very held and loved by the people that I've met. And I think I feel like that if I go to other NA meetings as well. It's not like these are the only meetings in the world, but for me, these are the meetings I go to regularly. And I love the people in them. I love the people that I'm getting to know in them. And I feel really, really lucky to have found that. I know, like, I knew then I'd found something really special, and I know that I was right. Now, like, when I look back on it, I can see, like, yeah, I was right. And these are the meetings that I met Jim in, and he became, like I said, one of my closest friends. And he was there for the first 4 years of my recovery. And I feel really blessed to have had that experience. Like, it just feels like everything kind of was synced up, synchronicity. I just, it's like like third step prayer, and it's like, take my will of my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. It's like when I'm following the will of my higher power, things just align. By the way, I'm not trying to say that my life is perfect by any means. I just feel like I'm able to deal with life in a much healthier and productive way because I have the love of NA and this fellowship behind me. Let me just check how long I've been speaking before I. Okay. So I've had a really strange week. This week. I've kind of told you guys about the fact that I'm housebound and I have, I'm mostly bedbound, but I have been able to do more physical activity in the last year. I started to be able to do some yoga, and I've been adding that into my, into my morning routine. I'll do some yoga when I get up, stretch out. I mean, I'm not like bending into like pretzel shapes or doing anything really hefty, but a lot of it's just lying down and doing things, but it doesn't matter. I'm not going to say just some of it is lying down, or a great deal of it is lying down, and that's fine. I don't care as long as I can move a little bit, because I was getting to a point where I was really scared that my body was just going to stop working because I wasn't able to do anything physical. And like the second that I felt like I was able to, I was straight on it. But I'm also really careful with how much I do, because I know it's really important not to tire myself out. So I've added yoga to my daily routine, and that's been beautiful. And then I kind of came into contact with somebody who was doing this kind of somatic, clinical movement, something or other. I don't really know what any of it means. Basically, it was just very gentle movement. But she was, I thought, oh, this is a lovely person. And she asked if I would be like her case study as she moved on to the next level of this. And so she's been coming here every week, and we've been doing that. But I have been feeling increasingly uncomfortable with the relationship with this woman. And, she's entitled to believe whatever she believes. Let me just say that first of all. We all are entitled to believe whatever we believe. But it's her views, in my view, are very extreme. And she doesn't believe that viruses exist. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm not going to, that doesn't matter one way or the other what anybody believes. It's an outside issue. But my illness began with a virus. And it's been 15 years of a really hard time. So it felt like she was kind of invalidating what I've been through. And, she said stuff about things being psychosomatic, which I don't like hearing. And then she insinuated that I was a hypochondriac. And if you look up the definition of a hypochondriac, I am like the opposite of that, actually. I never go to the doctors. I never think there's anything wrong with me. So And I kind of let it slide, you know. I've been trying to make everything okay that's been going on because I wanted it to be okay. Like I was like, you know, this is good for me, somebody that's helping me and it's free. And I've been like letting it slide. And I realized that like I wasn't comfortable with it. I was very uneasy. I'm a people pleaser to a fault. And so this was just like me not saying anything, not ruffling any feathers. You know, I didn't want to hurt anybody else's feelings. But I was having such bad anxiety about this, especially after the hypochondriac comment. I spoke to my sponsor and I was just like, you know what? I think I'm gonna have to be honest about this. And so that's what I did. And I did stand up for myself. I was still polite and nice. I just kept to the facts and I just said, I'm uncomfortable with this. I don't want us to continue. That's the short of it. And so, yeah, that's been weird this week. And do you know what? I feel guilty. I only sent this message to her yesterday, and I feel bad. I don't like the thought of her being sad or upset or feeling bad about herself. But the thing is you can't just say what you want to people. You can't force your views on people. And you know, I need to stand up for myself sometimes. And that's okay. And so, as me and my sponsor say, guilt is lazy energy. It's not going to change the past, and it doesn't do anything about what's going to happen in the future. It's no. So I'm putting that to one side and saying lots of serenity prayers and third step prayers, handing it over. You know, what's been harder for me this week than that is that my mum, I don't even really want to talk about it, to be honest, because I'm so scared of it. My mum had a mammogram last week and she's got to go. The hospital phoned her up and said she's got to go and have another test on Tuesday, which, you know, she's got to travel to Aberdeen and get other tests done. But they're not saying anything. They're not saying you know, it could be nothing. It could be whatever. But that scares the shit out of me. Because I love my mom so much. She's a really good person. Like, she's a really decent human being. She's not an addict in any way, shape, or form. Like, she's the sort of person that could sip on a glass of wine, like, for an entire evening and, like, still have, like, half of it there, like, when she goes to bed, whereas I would be downing that, like, straight away. I take after my dad like that. Not that addicts aren't good people, but she just is a really good person. She always does everything for everyone else. And I just can't bear the thought of anything happening to her. And, you know, I know it's life. This is life. People get older, health things happen. I know that more than anyone. I just can't bear anything to happen to my mum. So again, I've had to, you know, that's something I've got to continue to just hand over. When I'm feeling really afraid, I pray. And that's not the way I used to deal with things. Not at all. But there's, as my sponsor would say, there's a lot of power in prayer. And she's always encouraged that, you know, just to pray. She doesn't tell me how to pray. She doesn't tell me what to believe in. Nobody in NA has ever told me, this is what you need to believe in. This is how you need to pray. That has never happened. I want to make that very clear. I was thinking about this recently because the person that was doing that movement therapy stuff with me, I told her, you know, I'm in a 12-step fellowship. She said, oh, but don't they really just push religion down your throat there? And I was like, once again, misinformed. I was like, no, not at all. This, you know, it's a spiritual program. It's not religious. It just encourages us to have a higher power that we can believe in, something that's greater than us, that's that's more loving than me. And yeah, so like I keep thinking about how it's actually the exact opposite in my experience. Like nobody has ever told me what to believe in. And so yeah, prayer's become a really important tool in my life. And that shocks me so much, honestly, when I could have told myself that like 5 years or whatever before, I would never have believed it. But it really helps me. Sometimes I write my prayers down. More often than not, I just say it in my head. But it's sometimes just like, okay, I need to hand this over. And then I might need to do that in like 5 more minutes or less continuously if it's something that I'm obsessing over. But that's how I get through the ups and downs of life. I make sure to pray as soon as I open my eyes in the morning. Because I think it's important just to take that moment. And a lot of the prayer the praying I do is to say thank you, and to like kind of get myself to remember where I came from and how bad things were and then how powerless I am and but where am I at, where I'm at now, and just to have that moment of it's kind of like reflection, but also just like, yeah, just pure gratitude. It's a good way for me to start my day, honestly, because I don't wake up feeling like full of the joys of spring. I usually wake up and think, oh my God, do I have to get up today? Ugh. Oh, Jimmy used to have a really good saying about that, but I can't remember. I'll never do it justice. What did he say? He used to say that his disease would wake up before him. My disease wakes up before me, bops me on the nose, and says, "How do you want your misery today?" He said it much better than that, but I always think that that's very true. The disease of addiction is not a morning person, but I love my morning time because now it's developed into a morning routine, and it's very sacred to me that time in the morning. I really don't like it when it's like interrupted. And like I said, I do my yoga and the prayer. I like medit, do some meditation. I read the just for today and some other daily readings and other NA literature. I'll do step work if I have some. I love that time to just do those things. I think routine is very important to me now. Well, no, not I think it is very important to me. So I have that morning routine, and I also have like I do the same meeting at the same time on each day, and that's very important to me. That's really like the cornerstone of my day is just that I have this meeting to go to, and I'm gonna be around people who are who I can identify with, who love me and accept me, and I can just be myself around. I mean, that's such an amazing thing that NA has given me is this ability to be myself. And I'm not always myself 100% of the time. Sometimes I have to be different versions of myself because I'm around family or, people that are not in NA, and I can't be just like my crazy self always. And that's okay. But I feel like I can really be myself around the people in NA. And just be honest. Like it's amazing, just like that spiritual principle of honesty and how much that sets, like, has set me free in so many ways. But I like that it's always, that we're practicing spiritual principles because I have to practice honesty all the time. It doesn't come naturally to me, the disease of addiction doesn't like honesty. So it wants me to not tell anybody how I'm feeling. And I have to really like not allow that to happen. That's why it's good that we talk about practicing the spiritual principles because I practice that. I'll think, okay, I don't want to talk to anyone about this, but if I'm practicing my program, I've got to just be honest and be vulnerable with somebody, and that will make me do that, and then I will usually feel a lot better for it, or I'll share about it in the meeting. just be honest about where I'm at on that day, you know? Let me just check what time. Oh no, have I stopped my timer? Oh no, it's okay. So yeah. I've been a bit all over the place. I really appreciate you all listening to me. And there's so many things I could talk about, you know. Like, I'm not going to keep talking for much longer, but I was thinking about this. Like, whenever I tell anyone that this is like a 45-minute share in this meeting, they're like, oh my God, that sounds so frightening. And I'm like, I mean, I know I can talk for that long. It's just like, where do I go? Where's the direction that I go? There's so many things I could talk about. And you know, once I've finished, I'm gonna be like kicking myself because I'll be like, oh God, I forgot to say this. This is what I meant to say. But it doesn't matter. I think what comes out is just what's supposed to come out. And I always just pray before I share and just hope that my higher power guides me to say what I'm meant to say. I don't know how it all works, but that's okay. I just feel like I want to say I'm really grateful. And I think I've probably said grateful like about 30 million times in this share alone. And I say it all the time anyway, but I really mean that I am so grateful. Like, I'm so grateful for online meetings. If online meetings didn't exist, I would not exist. Like, I would be gone by now. I'm so grateful that there is this platform so that an addict like me can get clean and stay clean, you know, one day at a time. Because who would have thunk it, you know? I'm so grateful for the people that I've met in NA. So many special people. And, you know, what everyone that I've met along the way, like what they've given me. I'm just constantly learning from the people around me in these meetings. I'm just very grateful. I feel like, honestly, like I really do feel like the most blessed person sometimes because I just kind of, you know, like I don't need any more than this. Like, this is enough for me. I'm happy. And yeah, I am gonna leave it there. Give it some time so you guys can share. And don't worry about if you don't want to share back to me, just share where you're at. I encourage you to do that because I know that that's really important. Yeah, thank you to Jay and Steve and Ellie and Elaine for your service in this meeting. Thank you, each and every one of you who are here, and thank you for listening to me. And yeah, I love you guys. Thank you.